Blog Talk Radio.
To independence now. Tomorrow.
Yeah, they say those who do not move do not feel the change, but the African people aware of the pain, aware of the gain, invader deception, black presidents who are white man extensions, people from Cape to Cairo rebel, cause fake independence and ongoing hell, colonial ties still keep them chained, the richest continents getting robbed again, the IMF and World Bank criminal schemes, what about reparations? To me it seems that every metropole from Amsterdam to Paris and Brussels was built with the hands of African labor, a slave relation, developing Europe at expense of the nation, but Africans rebel from the first conquest till flag independence at last accomplished.
Il y en a qui demandent la vie de tout l'impérialisme. L'impérialisme, regardez dans vos affaires, quand vous mangez les grains de riz, de maïs, de mil importés. C'est ça l'impérialisme, n'allez pas plus loin.
Yeah. Hey yo, the spirit of Lumumba lives on in Congo, like Thomas Sankara in Burkina Faso, Zamora Michelle, it was Viva Frelimo, but Mozambique still fighting for freedom. Why did these three who dare to invent the future then clash to the fullest extent with the colonizers? If we open eyes, if we can see the rich whites, we're scared of rising African power, real independence, a people's politics, anti-capitalism. So they stifle their growth in every way, so that South Africa looks colonized today. For any flaws of Mugabe, that ain't what they hate. Zimbabwe's not a colony, make no mistake. Look at AFRICOM, the African command. That's the US and a puppet shaking each other's hands. Divide and conquer is a hell of a tactic. They blame Africa for relations that backward. The whole basis was plundered from outside Rwanda, Uganda. The Sudan's divides, pushing forward war for precious coal sand. So cell phones and PCs are sold in lands where people don't know how they were constructed. Your Windows now functions from a child's destruction.
I'm a soldier for life. The battle I'm fighting has no ending. To struggle is to go the distance. To win is not to care how far one must go.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How do we get access to this, Jackson?
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer.
Yes.
And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mr. Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
You're waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Do you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over.
Mr. Jackson.
Sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it. I'll see to that. Get him where it hurts.
Starring Gary Dorden from TV CSI.
This is the military, David.
Revolutionary greetings. Welcome to another edition of Georgia University Radio. I'm your host, Bumana Hugh Jahar Shakir. I'd like to thank everybody for joining to our broadcast and been riding with us all these years. I'd like to thank everybody who continue to educate themselves and liberate themselves on various levels. But before I start the show out and bring on our guests, I would like to read of a couple of events that happened in history this month, as well as I want to tell you our program at Georgia University. Georgia University has fivefold goals. Our first goal is to eradicate functional literacy among new African black prisoners. Two, to eradicate cultural ignorance among new African prisoners. Three, to transform the criminal mentality to the new African mentality. Four, to assist in the rebuilding and stabilization of the new African communities. And five, to prepare a new African prisoner for release, reducing new African recidivism. Okay, now I'm about to go on to the events that happened this month. On February the 16th, U.S. and other foreign were defeated by Castro, became pretty much independent revolutionary Cuba. Okay, also on February the 16th, in 1943, St. Clair was born. St. Clair was a 1960 activist and independent filmmaker who focused on the black experience, provided acclaimed works from Dr. John Henry Clark, Carl Robeson, Gordon Parr, the blues, religion, and much more. He was accredited for the documentary Great and Mighty Walk by Dr. John Henry Clark, In Motion by Amira Baraki. In 1893, on the 16th, Dr. George E.L. Patton at Meharry Medical College was the first female student, and she received her medical degree. She worked as a doctor in Liberia, Africa. Then she was the first black female doctor in Memphis, Tennessee, and the first licensed black female surgeon and physician in Tennessee. On February the 7th, 1942, Dr. Huey P. New, organizer of the Black Power of Self-Defense, a military organization, was born in 1942. On February the 18th, the Black Education Institute was founded in Augusta, Georgia, in 1867. It later moved to Atlanta and took the name of Morehouse College. Also on the 18th, Willie Mikasa, daughter of Ricks, was born in 1943. He is an unsung civil rights activist, community organizer, a prominent pan-Africanist, a leader in SNCC, and an all-African People Revolutionary Party. And he coined the Black Power slogan in 1966. On February 19, 1919, the Pan-African Congress organized Dr. W. D. Boyer. Also on the 19th, Lugina Burns Hope was born in 1871. She was an activist for racial and sexual equality, and she was against lynching. On February 20th, 1947, in Abadan, Mississippi, Iman Abdullah Malik Kaba, formerly known as Jeff Ford, a political prisoner, was born. You can find out more about Iman Malik on the Jericho Animus website. On February 21st, 1965, Malcolm X, Elhaj Malik El Shabazz, a revolutionary leader, an activist, a pan-African, was assassinated in 1965. February 22nd, 1930, Janelle Lawson, a human computer, was the first black woman hired in a technical position at what became NASA, National Aeronautics and Space Administration, during the race to outer space. Also on the 22nd, in 1928, Clarence Edward Smith, known as Clarence 13th, the Nation of Islam, took on himself under Malcolm X, was born February 22nd, 1928, in Danville, Virginia. He went on to found the 5% Nation, what later became known as the Nation of the Earth, and took the name Father Allah or Allah. Also, on February the 22nd, Alba Shaka Woodfox, who was a former political prisoner of the Angola 3, a Black Panther. He did 43 years in prison. He was released on February the 2016. Those are a couple of events that happened in the history during this month. But I also want to read something in regards to Mikasa Dada Ricks, a little history. Willie Mikasa Ricks was one of those hot sunny days down in the Mississippi Delta where we were conducting march. Willie Ricks was speaking before Stokely, as he always did, to excite the crowd. "What we need," said Willie's power. And one of those old ladies in the crowd yelled out, "Black people need some power." Willie responded, "That's right, honey, we need some black power," as told by Charles Hamilton on the origin of the term black power, which is a book that were printed along with Stokely Carmichael called Black Power with Charles Hamilton. Willie Ricks, also known as Mikasa Dada, is among the greatest and most unsung all activists produced by the turbulent 1960s civil rights movement. Brother Ricks is a seminal civil rights activist, pan-Africanist, community organizer, and leader in the struggle for equal rights in the U.S. Brother Ricks was given the name Mikasa by a former Ugandan president. Ricks first gained wide recognition for his work as a field secretary in the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, SNCC. While a member of SNCC, he organized numerous sit-ins, marches, and public demonstrations throughout Tennessee, Georgia, South Carolina, Alabama, Mississippi, which is New Africa. He is widely credited with coining and popularizing the slogan Black Power and creating the Black Power Salute. His activities have carried him all over the world, all over this country, working for social change. Hold up. Yeah, working for social change. Ricks has also traveled throughout the African diaspora in an effort to eliminate the misery and suffering of oppressed people. Ricks was introduced to the civil rights movement in 1960 in Chattanooga, Tennessee, at the age of 17. For 2 years, he was active in the Chattanooga NAACP during the sit-in movement. He quickly became a hero in the African-American community. In 1961, Ricks was contacted by SCLC to help with voter registration in Chattanooga. His speaking style, brimming with passion and sincerity, prepared him to be one of the South's most powerful organizers. Ricks continued organizing in Chattanooga until he was asked to come to Georgia by SNCC in 1962. As a result, he became part of SNCC's first direct action program in Albany, Georgia, where he first began to build a long-term work relationship with Dr. Martin Luther King. Ricks continued organizing throughout the South. Hold up, my bad. I'm moving too fast. His speaking style brimmed with passion, sincerity, prayed him to be one of the South's most powerful organizers. Ricks continued organizing in Chattanooga until he was asked to come to Georgia by SNCC in 1962. As a result, he became a part of SNCC's first direct action program in Albany, Georgia, where he first began to build a long-term relationship with Dr. Martin Luther King. Ricks continued organizing throughout the South. While working in Mississippi in 1964, he helped build the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party, MFDP, along with Fannie Lee Hamer and others. Subsequently, Ricks went to Alabama and helped to organize the Lyon County Freedom Organization, which was known as the Black Panther Party. He eventually began speaking on the same platform with major figures such as Dr. King and others, having participated in hundreds of sit-ins, stand-ins, demonstrations, picking and marching. Ricks paid the price by being jailed, beaten, shot, and being by dog. He was once shot by the police, resulting in a scar on his head, which is still visible today. He was offered a major strategy for these events. Among the many demonstrations that Ricks participated in were the Orangeburg Massacre in South Carolina, the Edmund Pettus Bridge March on Bloody Sunday, and the March Against Fear, Memphis, Tennessee, to Jackson, Mississippi. He once described his life as a series of beatings, bombings, shooting, fights, and assassinations. Ricks would close the session with Kwame Ture, formerly known as Stokely Carmichael. They traveled extensively together, with Ricks as the introductory speaker for Kwame. When Ture stepped down as the chairman of SNCC, Ricks was a leading candidate to replace him, but Tudor worked quietly in the background. With H. Rat Brown, Abdul Al-Amin, which is a political prison right now, was selected as SNCC's next chairman. Ricks was appointed to travel with Brown in order to assist him. Ricks' organizing skills were so effective that the state of Georgia declared him as one of the 10 most dangerous persons in the state in 1973. After leaving SNCC, he and Ture worked briefly with the Black Panther Party for self-defense. Ricks and Ture also were on the Central Committee of the All-African People Revolutionary Party for many years, with Ture the main spokesperson. They had developed a strong pan-African stance and were extremely
serious about spreading the ideology throughout the diaspora. Nicknamed the preacher, Ricks may not have demonstrated the eloquence or tour of Dr. King, but his fiery rhetoric and sing-song cadence effectively connected with his listeners and moved them to action. History books frequently document activities of the major leaders of a movement. However, Brother Ricks is a reminder that the true backbone of the struggle is comprised of the men and women who labor in the background of social change. While currently residing in Atlanta, he has continued to travel to Africa and throughout the diaspora in the struggle for equality for oppressed people. Brother Sneak member James Foreman said it best when he wrote, Willie Ricks must rank as one of those unknown heroes who captured the mood of history. And calling for black power, he called the essence of the spirit, moving black people in the United States around the world without power. Yeah, we send a salute to Barbara Picasso Ricks, who still is among us, are doing the work. I'd like to bring on to the show tonight. Let me see. I'd like to bring on one of our guests. Let me see. Hold up. Bring on one of our guests. Let me open the lines up right quick. Okay. So Jennifer, you there?
I am.
Okay. I know the brother. Still doing his thing. Okay. How you doing tonight, sister?
I'm great, and you?
I'm doing well, sister. And before we start, I can you tell the people about yourself, introduce yourself to the people, and tell them who you are.
I am Jennifer Raging Phoenix Bonaparte, third degree black belt in the Pasa Roof system, and 4-time national champion.
Okay. Can you tell a little about your background, how you got started in this, what sparked your interest, and, you know, tell a little about yourself in regards to what sparked your interest in engaging to this art, and what does it mean to you?
Actually, domestic violence brought me into the art. I had a domestic violence situation where I had to jump out of a moving vehicle, and I did not prepare. I did not feel safe. And the first thing that I did was when I got a gun license, I learned to shoot, but I thought maybe I won't be able to get to my gun. So I need to be able to fight open-handed as well. And that's what got me started in the martial arts. I have been doing it for about 11 years now.
Okay. You said domestic violence. Okay. Yeah, that's something we face a lot these days. Are you engaged in any kind of programs currently at your facility in regard to domestic violence to help women fight domestic violence or help women learn or teach women to protect themselves against attacks and rape, other things like that?
Yes, we do offer programs for domestic violence, but typically what I do is I suggest them to just go through the whole program, which is karate, kung fu, taekwondo, weaponry, and also kabuto, which is, like I already said, that weaponry. So, yes, I do, and I specialize in self-defense.
Okay. Can you get us a definition of self-defense so people can get an understanding of what the definition of self-defense?
Being able to protect yourself by any means. So if it takes, for instance, someone tried to rob me, and I was able to use karate to subdue them without killing them, but just to make sure that I'm safe and I'm protected. So in my words, self-defense is just to make sure you are able to go home to your family.
Okay. That's a good thing. That's always a good thing. So is there any kind of time for the self-defense? But when is self-defense necessary, or is it precautionary?
I'm sorry, is it always necessary, or?
I said, is self-defense always necessary, or is it used as a precautionary measure sometimes, or is it always necessary?
Both. To me, it's always necessary because I need to always be able to protect myself. Like I said, I've had many incidents where I've had to use self-defense, but it can also be just not being hit. For instance, I'm in a restaurant and somebody elbows or somebody, a waitress almost drops something on you. It's very good to be able to block It's a reflex. That way you are always protected. So, yeah, to me, it's always necessary.
Okay. Can you tell a little bit about your facility, what all do y'all offer, and what inspired you to found this organization? What inspired you to found it?
Actually, my organization is called Reverend Wynn Martial Arts. Reverend Wynn was my original trainer. He passed away in 2014, and that's exactly why we're called Reverend Wynn Martial Arts. We're at 4600 Quince Road, Memphis, Tennessee, 38117. We can be reached at 901-297-2411. And you asked me what made me found it. Well, I started off with Reverend Wynn, as I said, and I taught under him. So wherever he went is where I was. He was also my fiance, and he passed away. So in order to keep his legacy alive, I founded Reverend Wynn Martial Arts, or Raging Phoenix Martial Arts is what a lot of people call it as well.
Okay. I see Raising Phoenix is your nickname. What does that actually mean? How did you gain that name?
Raging Phoenix. Raging Phoenix came from actually him dying, and my head instructor decided, well, my original animal title was Black Falcon, and he said that I was stronger than a falcon. So in his mind, he asked what animal would represent me the best, and we came up with Phoenix because phoenixes always rise from the ashes, but they come up bigger, brighter, and stronger. So where everybody thought that I was just going to lay down and die and stop, I came up better. Raging is just from the fight. So when I spar, there is no stopping me.
Okay. Now in regards to the Pasu Ryu, is that a particular school of thought, or is a association of different types of martial arts?
It's an association combined of, we're actually, Master Ryu used to call us the original MMA, because we mix Kung Fu, Karate, and Taekwondo. It means, Pasuru means the way of honor in English.
Is that Pasuru, you mean the way of honor? Is that what it means?
It does, yes, sir.
Okay. Now, if y'all also understand that you are a full-time national champion, you're a national champion, right?
Correct.
Can you tell me about this Kung Fu Championship, how you tell us about what you had to go through to get to obtain that and things of the nature? What you had to do to attain it?
I had to first qualify to even go to the national. See, everybody that competes in the national championship has to qualify, so you have to go to a qualifier, which is a lot of intense training, trying to get past your qualifier. Once you get past the qualifier, we had a camp, which is a 12-hour-a-day camp. Yes, we get breaks in between, but 12 hours a day. I was training nonstop for 3 months in order to prepare for nationals. Once we got to nationals, there were, in my first division, the very first time, I think there were 12 women, and I didn't even know I won. So I was just fighting. That's all he told me to do, get in there and fight, win. And by the time it was over, they were raising my hand as number one.
Wow. You just blacked out and win. That was up. Blacked out and win. Okay. That's very interesting. Let me ask you a question. You know, I see there's a lot of children and people getting adopted, right? What actually are your thoughts in regards to that? People getting adopted and people getting kidnapped and people coming missing. What are your thoughts in regards to that? What would be your solution in regards to your training to alleviate
Number
that?
One thing is to pay attention. Even as children, the first thing that I do is tell them to pay attention to your surroundings. You have what I call spider senses. You can feel when something is not right. The hair on the back of your neck stands up. You kind of get jittery. Your stomach may feel funny. Those are signs that something is not right. Never ignore your instincts. That's number one. If you did that, a lot of times the abductions itself wouldn't even happen. But I will also tell parents to prepare their children because they're really after the kids. Prepare your children. They need to know exactly what to do. If they feel like something's happening, they need to scream to the top of their lungs if they do nothing else. Bring attention to yourself always. They may look at you like you're crazy, but you're protecting yourself.
True, indeed. That's a good advice. So in regards to your class, I know you deal with the youth. Do you actually train the youth to defend our attacks that you might try to abduct them, or do you actually train them in that aspect?
Yes, sir, definitely. My children are, they actually train with adults. So they do spar adults. They do know how to get out of the corner. Say, for instance, if somebody traps them in a corner, we practice on getting out of the corner. If somebody puts them in a chokehold, how do you get out of it? So we do. We go over that multiple times. Joint locks, joint manipulation, all of the above.
Okay. Okay. I understand that you teach at various schools, right? What types of results do you get? What types of results do you get from the students at the school or from the administration, so to speak, in regards to training people at the school?
The schools actually love our program. A lot of times we have the principals, if the student is in trouble, they'll put them in the martial art program. They'll say, well, can you take this child? They're having some disciplinary problems. Can you help us out with this? Sure. So they actually love the program. They also love the fact that a lot of our national champions, we have 14 national champions, child national champions, and they bring
children
to their schools. I'm sorry, say it again.
You said children champions?
Yes, definitely.
Interesting.
There's 14 of them that have come out of our school.
Wow. You know, in regards to the championship, are the championship just in the United States, or you have to go fight people in Japan and China and different places in Brazil? Do you have to go to other places to fight people, or is it all in the United States?
It's in the national championships are in the United States. Our goal next is to get on the world team where they go around to different countries to compete. We haven't gotten to that point yet, but trust me, we're on our way.
Okay. You also have a military background, right?
I do.
Okay, and in your military background, in regards to your training, is any of your training that you're doing now relevant to what you learned in the military, or is it something totally different?
Other than the discipline and the structure, everything is totally different.
Okay. In regards to people throughout history, right? What martial art people have you look up to throughout history? What people do you look up to? You know that motivate you or inspire you, so to speak, to do what you do.
There are so many. We have a female martial artist named Grandmaster Cynthia Thomas. She is phenomenal. And she specializes in teaching girls. So I watch her a lot. I follow her on Facebook. We have, I'm sorry, his name slips my mind right now. I can see his face because I watched him. He's supposed to be the only man that has beaten Bruce Lee, and he's actually a black man. His name escapes me at the moment.
I know you're talking about, I can't think of it. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Right.
He was a stupider Bruce Lee at one time, too.
Exactly. And most people don't know about him.
Is the name Von Cliff?
No. I'm getting ready to tell you right now. I'm pulling on as we speak because he is actually still alive.
You know, what's your take on why? Do you think
do you feel that martial arts are derived from Africa, or do you have another? Been exposed to another type of history?
Everything started from Africa. It did, and Grandmaster Kung Ri had always told us that is where it came from. Victor Moore is his name.
What a name?
Victor Moore.
Yeah, that's him. Yeah. That's him, yeah.
And you also have him. Thomas the Puppet.
Okay, yeah, that's him. The dude with the fro, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. with the fro, you know what I'm saying? He reminded me of George Jackson back in the day, because George had the fro. He was doing the karate in the prison. Karate Jackson, you know. Especially during that time, you know, at one time, I know that martial arts were banned during the 60s and the 50s and everything. The people come out of the military practicing martial arts, and they ain't really want people to be doing it, especially our people. So they were trying to ban certain things, and they made people register their hands and feet and everything. They were lethal weapons, and, you know.
Right.
It was a lot of racism going on in a particular sport and activity. There's a lot of stuff going on. You know, in regards to that now, do you experience racism? Do you experience racism now in regards to the craft?
Yes, sir. I truly believe that we will probably always have to go through that, because the martial arts is a white male dominated sport. So we will probably always have to go through that. It's just up to us to overcome. My children have experienced it. We take them as learning lessons. We do what we do, and we still keep it moving with a good attitude.
Okay. What you mean by white dominant male sport? Because I know it's a lot of different Asians, a lot of different people that do it, right? So are you saying that is it more European that we got belts or something, or is it more of them around peers?
Here, in the United States, the majority of our masters and our grandmasters are white males. And not saying that all of them are bad, because I know a lot of good ones, but it is definitely white dominated here in the United States, anyway.
Oh, man.
If you went to tournaments, if you went out to compete, that's what you're going to see.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to bring Shell P on, right? Because I'm hot. Bring him on for a moment. So I appreciate the information. Shell P, you there, brother?
All day.
Okay. How you doing? How you doing, good, brother?
I'm doing good, man. I can't complain at all. I bet you.
I'm doing well, man. Can you tell the people a little bit about yourself?
My name is Roderick Duncan. I'm a chef P. I'm a personal chef and a personal down in Memphis, Tennessee. I'm also the owner of God Body Fitness and Nutrition.
Okay. What inspired you to found God Body Fitness? What inspired you and motivated you to create that establishment?
Actually, I used to be overweight and unhealthy myself. And as when I first started this journey, thing I wanted to do was get rid of the man breast that I had. That was the first thing that had to go. On that journey, getting rid of those, I seen that the best way to live is eat clean. The best way to feel is to eat clean. No matter how much exercising I did, I always still felt the same way. It wasn't until I changed up what was going into my body what really made me start thinking, you know what? Why have I been doing this to myself all these years?
Okay.
So that led me to God Body, because not only did I go through this process, but go ahead.
Yeah, what do you actually mean by eating clean? What do you mean by that?
Clean. I got rid of the the pork, the beef. I stopped eating fried food, fast food, greasy food. Left the bread alone. I was 258 pounds when I first started. So I also had to stop drinking. Now, that was a process. Of course, the eating was a process, too. I just cut everything in half first. And after that, I cut the half in half, and then until I could just cut it out completely.
What exactly does God body signify to you? Is it talking a 5% of things? Is it a 5% of Nation God's Earth thing, or is it something different?
Well, God body is the doorway to a new lifestyle. So the doorway to a new way of thinking, just a new you.
Okay. In regards to your martial arts, how exactly did you and Sister Raising Phoenix meet? How do y'all actually meet? You know, in regards to her being your sensei.
Actually, that's my big sister. So, you know, she was always around doing her thing. Her and her fiance, I watched, you know, from afar. But like I said, again, it wasn't until I started changing my habits. That's when my thinking changed. And that was just something I wanted to get into. I never played sports before. So I figured, hey, I got two sons. So it'll be kind of hard for me to teach them and talk to them about sports when they could just come back and say, well, Dad, you ain't never played sports before either. Like, well, you got a point. So I felt like I need to do something, you know, where I can say, okay, I didn't play sports, but, you know, hey, I'm such and such belt, you know, as a Pasa Roo. I train MMA. You know, hopefully I'll get a chance to get in the cage one of these days when I can start from a business. But, you know, these are just things I want to do for my life as far as having a new body and a new way of thinking. I wanted to put it to work. I mean, you work hard, you got to think about it. You go to the gym, you put in this little time, you know, to destroy yourself just to build you up. You want to know if it's working or not. So, you know, I felt like I had stepped into the fountain of youth, so I put my body to the test.
True, indeed. What actually interests you in the MMA? What interests you in that type of activity, that type of sport? What interests you in that?
I think it's just the physical aspect of it as a human being. You know, what can a human being take? And also, is you know, what can I do in a situation where I would really have to protect myself in a situation like that? You know, it's 2020. It's a lot going on. And for me, and the way I think, I just want to be ready. Not necessarily get in a ring or a cage, you know, or any type of tournament or anything and fight as gaming or, you know, I mean, I want to be able to know what it feel like in certain instances so I'll know what to do in real life situations. If you stay ready, you don't have to get ready.
Yeah. So you basically want to test what you know, a gauge yourself. That's what you basically want to do, you know, in a life of spinning.
Right.
So like you said, you can do certain things in the gym and certain things in the dojo, but if you're not interacting for real, how are you going to know certain things are actually effective, you know, when you actually get into certain disputes with different individuals, right?
Right, yeah, and you want to know how to think in certain situations also because, like my sister was saying, you know, you have to think about your surroundings, pay attention to your surroundings. So, you know, in different situations, you want to make sure your mental is on point as well as your physical.
True, indeed. Yeah, in regards to your children, how are your children embracing the lifestyle that you embark, how they embrace your lifestyle, how they adopt the lifestyle, or are they slowly getting to the same thing, or what type of results have you been getting?
Well, you have to think about kids, first of all. If kids are typically, they go and gather around, you know, who they love. So if they see who they love doing one thing, of course they're going to want to do it too, especially if it's something that they do and see in their everyday life. So for me, with the martial arts, my daughter, Imani, she's 9 years old. She's also over there taking classes with Raging Phoenix. And my son, when he comes down from Houston, I send him straight over there, you know, so he's able to protect himself as well because he's not in the city. You know, and my smaller kids, you know, they just mimic whatever I do. You know, if I tell them that a certain type of food isn't good for them, they're going to repeat that. And in their minds, they know that I'm not going to hurt them. So, obviously, my dad said, that's not good for me. I don't want that. So you have to teach the kids when they're small because they're sponges, and you got to let them know the right information as well because you got to think about when we was younger. All we knew was to eat soul food, southern cooking, fried, you know, this, you know, and that's why a lot of us are diabetics today because of what we were taught as kids. Right. That's what we grew up on. So it's the chains that you have to break and start creating new links, not only for you, but for the kids coming up behind you because in the same way that you learn.
True indeed. You know, them chains are very psychological, man. They're very psychological, man. It fits a lot because our body depending on what our body is very dependent on what our mind has going on, depending on our mind, right? You know, I would ask you in regard to your chefing activities, do you have time to engage into the chefing now? Knowing that you run a business, you constantly training and preparing, do you actually have time to chef anything up now?
Man, to be honest with you, I hardly have time for anything, but I do cook for my clients every Sunday. I cook over 200 meals every Sunday for my clients that are doing the meal preps. I had to cut back on the catering and the food to focus and grow my business for now, you know, but eventually, not myself probably, but I have a crew in the kitchen cooking. But, yeah, cooking, that's my passion. That's my first love. I love to cook. And I, to be honest with you, I never thought that I'd love cooking or be cooking or training ever in my life, to be honest with you. So it's a new thing for me.
So the client get them a free meal every Sunday?
Well, I wouldn't say a free meal. no, they actually get meals for the whole week. Yeah, it comes with the program. They get the full God body program. They get the food because food, you got to think about it, nutrition is 80% of the whole thing. You know, you can go and work your face blue, you know, till you're throwing up all over the floor. But if you're not putting the right thing in the gas tank, the car just won't go right. It'll go for a minute, you know, but then you get the smoking and you get the pudding and the smoke coming out, backfiring. You know, you're going to put the right gas in your vehicle, so why not put the right gas in yourself? You can get another vehicle, but you can't get another you.
Okay. So you basically saying that the whole plan kind of with food, training, and everything, you know, it consists of
all day.
Your
a
plan.
Whole new lifestyle. A whole new lifestyle.
So is the plan like a 12-week program? How long does the plan last in regards to a client or it depends on who the individual is?
It really depends on the individual. It's actually it's an endless, you know, session for yourself. You know, this is for you. I'm just here to help and guide you and teach you along the way. But sooner or later, you're going to have a new body. You're going to have a new way of thinking. So you're going to want to do new things because now you're like, man, I haven't felt like this in so many years, or I haven't been able to run or even move. Can't even do a simple jumping jack correctly. You know, before they get winded. You know, now they're doing pull-ups. Like, I've never been able to do pull-ups before. So you have this new body and this new way of thinking, and you're going to want to do something with it. Same way I did. I chose mixed martial arts. You know, somebody may choose to say, hey, I want to travel the world now. Or the eating clean freezes up your thinking. It frees up your thinking. Releases your thinking. Say it like that. It releases your thinking. Think about it. Your brain sits in fluid. So if you're eating bad, you're drinking, you're out, you're barely getting any sleep, barely eating when you do eat is trash, All of that is sitting in that fluid that your brain sits in. So how could you possibly function, you know, the way you should be functioning on a intellectual level with all that toxic fluid and everything, you know, just sitting in your brain like that? So you have to think about that. Once that clears itself up and detoxes and cleans, now your brain has time to breathe. It's free. You can actually come up with new ideas. You're actually thinking clearer now. It's like, wait a minute, how have I been doing this to myself? We actually do these things to ourselves, not knowing, you know, that we're actually killing ourselves slowly by making decisions that we create over the term of our life, which we call habits. So you have to break old habits completely. And it's a process. It's nothing that's going to happen overnight. So we do 4 weeks. They say it takes 30 days to form a habit. So I put you in my program for 4 weeks just to show you, you know, we have to get you strong first. But this is really just to show you how bad that you needed this program, you know, and how badly that you needed to change your life before you ended up heading down a road to where the point where it really no return. The doctor is either going to tell you, hey, well, you should have been doing this, or he's going to slide you a sheet of paper that says you has no choice but to do it. So in those 4 weeks, you're really saying to yourself, man, I'm glad I'm getting my life together. And it's not for you now. It's not easy. It's for the future you. You know, you're doing something for the future you. Right now, you have to tear down the old you and be a new habit so the new you can grow. That's why I say it's a new lifestyle. My slogan is do something your future self will thank you for. And I thank the old me every day.
True indeed. True indeed, man. It's all in order to build that thing, you got to first destroy. You know, like in order for your building to be put right there, everything had to be destroyed in order for it to be built there. You know what I'm saying? That's the same thing with the body as well as the mind. You know, I kind of realized that your mind can do anything. It might do anything and put its strength to it, and it can cause the body to work itself too as well, you know, and put exhaustion or whatever, you know. But it's just interesting, though, that you look at a lot of certain things. People have willpower, then, but see right now, especially right now, we live in a time and era where a lot of people go on to help. A lot of people want to go to the natural way of living. They want to go holistic to health, and they don't want to eat pork, and they want to exercise. That's the thing right now. You know, that's the thing right now. People want to be healthy. People want to live forever, you know, so to speak. And everybody's fat now. But everybody doesn't take certain things as fat. Some people, a lot of people are more serious than others are in regards to their work. Because, like you said, it's a lifestyle. It's not just something to do to pass time or something to do to temporary or something to do for fun. It's something that you're actually living. It's a lifestyle. You're living it, you know what I'm saying? Everything you do. Sleep, eat, sleep, and breathe. Depending on what the particular culture you're on, set up. Because you're based on set up a new culture, a new way of life, right? A new beginning. You became a new person,
right?
A new man, a new woman. Through your own mental and physical aspects of things, or your being, you know. So, that's a good thing, right? You know. Now I've been checking you out for quite some time when I first met you, right? You know, I've been checking out the activity, man. I've been seeing how people become motivated, man. I've seen how you actually been expanding, you know, you get more and more clientele because people actually seeing the results, you know, and you were the prototype. You were the prototype for everything. You were the prototype yourself for everything. You put yourself out there. You sacrifice yourself first, you know, to show the people exactly what's going on. You know what I'm saying? You were the example. And everything paying off in regards to your work, as well as, you know what I'm saying, the encouragement that you encourage others, you know what I'm saying, to better themselves, right, which is an excellent thing. Okay, we need to be strong, especially in these times, man, when we have so many attacks. Like I was telling you, like people are getting adult, they had the physical attacks, and you know, and she was saying they know the martial art where the white male dominated, so we need more sisters, you know what I'm saying, who actually fight, you know, who trying to fight, you know, that do certain things, right? To leave a example, but for the younger sisters, you know what I'm saying? Because the younger sisters, a lot of we coming from a particular culture right now that women had a particular mentality that, you know, that women had a particular, they're not getting beat up. Dudes don't love them, and that dudes not beating them. A dudes not going to chain, ain't going to prison. They ain't cool. They ain't hard. We come from a culture where even though it's a lot of information out here and technology sophistication, our people are still ignorant. They're a lot ignorant than other times, like during the 60s, 70s, and the 80s. They're a lot more ignorant now with the access to information than they were during no particular time. You know, now people actually were reading certain things. People actually were going to talk to elders. People actually were doing certain things to get their experience. Now people are like, they're just going for the fire to certain things, man, or they're just doing things to belong or be cool, so to speak, man. But it's a different time now, you know.
Right. Well, you're most definitely right. It's a different time. So the key thing to do is to grow. You know, if everything is changing around you, that means you should be changing as well. Now, you shouldn't be living in the past if everything else around you is going into the future. So you should change your way of thinking and get your way of thinking caught up with the future. And the only way to do that is to start taking care of yourself. You know, take care of yourself better than you take care of the vehicle. Okay. You can get another vehicle, but you can't get another you.
Oh, yeah. In regards to the health, do you have any, like, any kind of books or document you can recommend for the people, know that they look at or read, know that they gain a better understanding of what you're talking about in regards to the health? In regards to
health, a lot of people have their own way of thinking of, you know, what's good for you, what not to eat. Every time you think one thing is good for you, something comes back and contradicts that and says, no, it's not good for you. So I would say the safest thing to do is to just eat clean. But there are other things out there you can look into. I would say look at The Game Changer on Netflix. They're going to tell you about how plant-based, you know, actually changes you from inside out. And for me, actually, I stopped eating meat 3 months ago, and I gained 20 pounds. So, but I look smaller than I was. I'm stronger, I'm faster, and I actually put it to the test. That's what really made me stop eating meat completely. I watched The Game Changer, and it was telling me that the biggest man in the world doesn't eat meat. The strongest man in the world doesn't eat meat. The fastest woman in the world doesn't eat meat. This team was great for a period of time because the team started eating a plant-based diet. So I'm saying to myself, you know, people started asking me as well about a plant-based diet, and I'm sitting there like, man, I never thought I'd be in a position to even tell you about it, but I don't know much about it, but I will, you know, look into it myself. I hate talking about something that I don't know about. So most of the time, if I want to learn about something, I just go and do it myself, you know, as long as it's not hurting me. But I felt like, you know, something that's going to make me stronger that I've been doing my whole life, well, let's put that to the test. I want to see if that's true or not. And actually, plant-based, you know, speaking with a plant-based diet consistently, in the beginning it was hard because think about it. I'm 35 years old. For the past 30-plus years, I've been eating meat. You know, I've been programmed to know that if you eat meat, it's protein. You need that to grow. So I had to get rid of that thinking. You know, not only that thinking, that lifestyle that came with that thinking, just to form a whole new lifestyle for that path that I was trying to take. And once I got on it, like I said, it was hard in the beginning, but it's a process. I turned eating meat every day till 5 times a week to 3 times a week to 5 times a month to 3 times a month to now once or twice a month. You know, everything is a process, and eventually, I've got it down to at least once a month now. Eventually, I want to just take it all the way out because, like I said, it does make me feel better. It does keep me lighter. Meat actually slows me down now when I put it into my body. So I'm really trying to lead forward going to a full plant-based diet and see where that takes me. And it's just something that I'm doing right now. But, again, I like to be able to tell people about my personal experiences. That way I can make it more relatable. Because think about it. If I come up to you and say, hey, man, you overweight. Your stomach too big. You need to come to God about it. Let me get your stomach off of you. You're going to look at me like I'm crazy. But if I walk up on you and be like, man, you know what? I used to have one of those. You're like, what? And I show you a picture of me with a stomach that looks like yours. You're like, damn. Man, how did you do that? You know, now we can have a conversation. You know, now we can talk.
Yeah, yeah.
Versus me just coming at you like, I don't even know you. You said what now?
Yeah, because you don't show them it's intangible. You know, we people that we like to bleed by example. We don't show them it's intangible. And now, like, damn, you know, right. I can train that. So he trained it. I can do the same thing.
Right. Right. And that's what I tell him. I said, man, if I can do it, anybody can do it. So the matter is, anybody can do it. You just have to want to change. And you can ask my clients, man. I'm not calling them every day. I'm not texting them, hey, you haven't been in the gym, because I can't want this more than you want it yourself. It's your life. You know, this is your life. If you want a new life, I can help you get one, but you have to want it. If you come through those doors, guess what? We're working on you. But this is only 20% inside of here. When you leave those doors, the other 80%, you know, is what determines your report card. We do a 4-week report card. It's just like school. You know, you go to school, you miss Monday. They starting the test Friday, so Monday they showing you how to do it. You prepping through the week, and Friday you taking the test. Well, if you don't show up for the prep, you know, you're not going to get good grades at the end of the semester. So at the end of the 4 week, that's the end of the semester. We do it before and after. But as my clients come in, I pay attention to their body. So I know, hey, you've been drinking. Like, how you know that? I'm like, because it's all in your body. Your body release water. That's why you bloated. Because you've been drinking alcohol. And that's going to keep your skin loose. And it's hard to tighten loose skin. So leave the alcohol alone, and your body won't keep releasing water. And your skin will tighten.
Okay, that's interesting, though. Very interesting. You know, I got a question for you both. I got a question for you and Ray to Phoenix both. If you can tell an individual anything about starting a business, what would you tell them? Y'all both can answer it.
I would say be patient. Definitely be patient, but be steady. Do not give up. Consistency is the key.
Yeah, I would most definitely say don't give up. I would most definitely say don't look for anyone to help you. If you're going to do this, then just do it. You know, don't expect people to just help you, because that's not, you know, what's going to happen. What may happen is once they see you going and the ball rolling, you're going to have a few people that say, hey, you know what, you know, if you need anything, you let me know. Okay, well, they're not talking about it to need some money or anything like that. You know, they just saying that to motivate you, I'm guessing. But if you really want to run a business, run a business. I would say pray about it to make sure that's what you need to do. Make sure you know all the ins and outs of running a business. Make sure your business is profitable, because those bills are going to come every month, regardless if you make money or not. The bills coming. And I would also say, starting a business is not a get away from a job card, because if you start a business in the beginning, you are the business. You have to be there every day. The business does not work without you.
Okay. That's really good information y'all dropping. Okay. My next question is, are either one of y'all doing any kind of like events and programming in the community, like for the youth or anything, like you're going to the community, like doing stuff at the park or a recreation center? Y'all doing anything for the community or for the youth and the people in the environment? Y'all doing anything like that, any kind of program, so to speak?
Most definitely. For me, we do demonstrations in the community all the time, so they can see that our culture can do the martial arts as well. We also do different walks, like breast cancer walks. We have done the St. Jude Marathon. We have done a lot of things. And, of course, we're centered pretty much around youth. We do train adults, but we are centered around the youth. So everything we do is geared pretty much towards them, unless you're a part of the adult class.
Okay. You say St. Jude Festival.
I'm sorry, say it again.
What festival you say? You said St. Jude Festival?
St. Jude Research Hospital for Children.
Oh, St. Jude. Okay. I thought you said St. Jude. Okay. All right. Okay. Go ahead, brother.
Yeah, I was just gonna piggyback off what you were saying, man. You know, the whole thing is geared towards the youth. Actually, I try to aim towards more kids, you know, try to get them involved with anything that's going on in my building just to get them off the streets. My doors are always open to the young kids around here. They're always in and out of here. I train kids every day. At the park, I'm always talking to kids, you know, just trying to see what's on their minds and trying to get them involved with themselves, you know, instead of following crowds, because the kids these days, they want to be, you know, in a crowd. They want to be labeled with the cool kids, you know. It's not anything self-motivation anymore with the kids. So I'm all about helping them motivate themselves so they'll know, you know, you can stand alone on your own 10 toes. So, and with that will help with a lot of depression that these kids are seeing, with a lot of crimes that these kids are turning to, you know, a lot of running the streets because they feel like they have to be associated with something just so they can mean something.
Yeah. It's all that youth are always looking for identity, even adults. Some of us now still looking for identities, you know. You know, right. As adults, looking right. for identity or looking to belong. And then the thing now that the youth are so enthused about is the criminal mentality. You know, like everybody want to be a gangster. Everybody want to be a crip or blood. Everybody knowing someone has something on the street reputation or be known for something, right? You know, and those things are popular because it's being promoted, you know what I'm saying, on social media. We're promoted in music. We're promoted in movies. You know, that's all they're seeing. Then a lot of times, you know, then the parents are not involved in the children's lives, so that make it even worse. You know, like social media raising children now. So it's a different,
right.
a whole different predicament that we facing. You know, it's a beast that we facing.
I mean, like
crazy.
I said, if you stay ready, you don't have to get ready. You're right. It is a beast that we facing. So in order to conquer a beast, you have to become one yourself.
True indeed. I have a question for you, Raising Phoenix. In y'all training, do y'all do any weapon training or everything is just hand to hand?
Yes, we do training weapons. We have 5 different weapons that we're using, but we do know 12 different weapons.
Okay.
That's called Kabuto.
You say what?
It's called Kabuto.
Kabuto, no, those are what the weapons are called?
Yes, that's the form. So karate, or our style of karate is Pasaru. It's weaponry is totally different. It's called Kabuto. It's the Japanese
martial art. It's a different art itself?
Yes, it's an art within itself.
Okay, I didn't know that. Okay, now, in regards to like the grappling and the wrestling and all that, we're going by the Afro. Is that a particular style by itself too as well? In regards to like the wrestling and grappling.
Wrestling is actually a martial arts on its own. Then you have judo, which is pretty much ground fighting, and then you have jujitsu. They fight off the ground too. So it's many different martial arts styles that incorporate grappling and ground fights.
Okay. Have you ever been exposed to the 52 blocks?
Say it one more time. I'm sorry.
I said, have you ever been exposed to the 52 blocks?
52 blocks. I'm not familiar, I don't think.
The 52 blocks was basically a style that was created in the prison system. You know what I'm saying? It had a lot to do with a lot of the guard bodies, the 5% in New York. You know, the 52
mm-hmm.
blocks, you know, the 5 + 2 = 7, which is God, you know. And it was a sign they were using, like, as a form of martial arts, you know what I'm saying? They were inspired by our people, you know. And it's a different type of fighting style that people are actually 52 block masters out there now. A lot of the masters are 5%, you know, out there.
Uh-huh.
Then it's an event taking place this year. I think the name of it. The event gonna take place, I think, in August. And the event is it's a martial art, everything African inspired martial arts, right? And the brother who's doing it, you know what I'm saying, is his name Balogun Ajatunde. He got like 25 different books about martial arts, right? And he got different people from different styles coming to do different demonstrations, right? I can't think of the name of the event, but he doing the event this year though. I can't think of the name right now. When I find that, I'm sending y'all the information so you can see it for yourself.
Please do. I had
him on the show one time too as well. He write a lot of books. You know what I'm saying? Go out to martial arts and he did with the Yoruba culture, the Ifa. So he got a lot of martial art dealing with that culture aspect, like dealing with Ogun, like the war god. You feel me? So he dealing with certain aspects.
Uh-huh.
The lagoon and the metal and everything like that, right? So, different things like that. So, it's just information because, like you said, we everything is all connected. Like you said, your master had told you it came out of Africa, right? So, everything is connected
right.
In a different way. You know, it's just understanding about people seem to think that, you know, that the European created all this stuff, and especially when they see a lot of European being masters and grandmasters. You know that they're gonna take the attention away. Like, damn, these white people started all this stuff. They're gonna be thinking because of what they see these people, but they got a deeper meaning and understand behind it. Even the first samurais, you know, African people, stuff like that, right? You know, those things need to be known, and understood. So it actually get our people a better respect and love for actually practicing these certain type of discipline. They give them more love, understanding when they know that it directly involves their culture. You know,
right?
Drinking about their history. You know, it's just interesting. You know, it's just interesting. Yeah, I want to thank both of you. I've come onto the show to show y'all now that it was an understanding, right? And I was saying, taking the time out y'all schedule and those share this knowledge with understanding, right? We have a call up and open the line for their call. Let their call to ask some questions and statements, right? Right quick. Okay, hold up.
Okay.
Okay. Relax, Mama Condi.
Yes.
How you
greetings,
doing, Mama
Condi? Everyone.
How you doing? I don't know. Open your line up. So you can talk to the guests. Ask them a couple of questions. You know.
Thank you. How y'all
You're
doing?
Welcome.
Y'all okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Great. Thank you for asking. Proud of y'all. You know, I got some revolutionary family in Ida B. Wells, Memphis, Tennessee. So I'm real glad to hear y'all right now and what you're doing. I'm proud of what you're doing. I am blind in a wheelchair. I'm a shut-in, and I've got issues that are not my fault, but they happened anyway. So when I get to hear about what's happening in nutrition for the mind and the body, I get real excited, and I'm very proud of y'all for doing what y'all do. Are you familiar with a brother in the arts there in Memphis? I think his name is, it'll come to me. Matter of fact, Bomani, you had him as a guest a while back. Kakai, is that his name?
Kawi,
thank you. Are y'all familiar with him?
Definitely. He works out at God Body.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Yes, ma'am. We're one of his sponsors.
Oh, beautiful. I do have one question. Well, it might turn into more than one. You know, with elders, that can happen. I'm blind. How would y'all help me defend myself? I'm in a wheelchair. Thank you.
Okay. So self-defense as far as in a wheelchair, as long as you can you use your hands? Do you have function of your hand?
Somewhat. I have nerve damage, so they tremble sometimes. And neuropathy with arthritis. when I was attacked by the state of Ohio, I was homeless and unable to care for myself, and I was incarcerated, and I lost control of everything. I had everything under control, diabetes, high blood pressure, you know, all the typical stuff. And now it's hard to catch up when you fall behind like that.
But yes, I have
somewhat use of my hands.
If you have use of your hands, you can always use them, whether it's a kneecap, whether it's a joint. A joint can only take 2.2 pounds of pressure before it snaps. So whether you can grab a finger, break it, knee, push them as hard as you can with your hand backwards towards their knee, and it goes the opposite direction, all you need is 2.2 pounds of pressure, and I promise you that it's not a lot. You can use your wheelchair, running over toes. I mean, anything to get you free. Really, they're not going to expect it from you, so it's going to be a shock anyway.
Oh, so yeah. I can do with my body what I did with my mind when I was in court. They looked at me. They saw a poor black female, and I think they underestimated me, and I won my case.
Exactly.
So you're telling me I can do the same thing with my body that I did with my mind and be intentional about them underestimating me.
Right. Yes, ma'am.
Ah, okay.
That's how you catch someone off guard. Yeah, that's how you catch someone off guard. People underestimating you will always get caught off guard.
Okay.
And you just be ready. You can also get you a dog and get him trying to protect you. You know, those animal companions, those dogs, they are good friends. My dad has one, actually. He could barely get around now, and his dog is, he sends his dog to get trained, and he moves when he moves. No one can get near him if he don't want them to. And the dog is actually, you know, a good friend to him. You know, when he's there by himself, he has the dog with him. And it's also for protection as well. So if you don't have any problems with, you know, a companion, I would look into getting one. Because the dog is going
to
let you know.
I'd prefer to have a mate.
That too. I'd rather have a mate. So sometimes you can.
I'd have
can
to get rid of everything I have in my house if I had a dog.
Yeah,
not enough room for me and a dog.
Off, that dog gonna love you for life.
That's funny. I could just see me now with dog hair all in my locks and oh no.
You got to get you one of those clean cut dogs. You can't get you one of those shaggy dogs, man. You need to do a
clean cut dog. Okay.
Get them to get groomed every week. And you know, when y'all get out and hit the town, both of y'all looking good together. Ain't nobody messing with you because you got those teeth showing on the side.
He got jokes. I don't have no teeth.
I hope the dog
Gumby, has sweetie some. Pie. But I do have false teeth I put in every now and then.
Okay.
So I am the best of both worlds.
Yeah, good grip on them, they'll work. Yeah, that dog going to have enough teeth for both of y'all.
Yes, sir.
I want to thank y'all for helping me to laugh tonight. I hadn't had a reason to smile today. And I thank you very, very much. I'm a shut-in, and I've been a shut-in now for a couple months over a year. And mostly because a lot of the people believe the lies. So even though I won my case, a lot of people believe the lies about me and have left me to fend for myself. And that's
right.
A difficult thing to do. The media had a lot to say when I was accused. when I won my case, the media went silent. And so people, even to this day, walk up to me and say, oh, I thought you were dead. Or, oh, I thought you were locked up. That's how vicious the media is. They don't like stories about black people who fight and win.
Most definitely.
Right.
But, you know, sometimes there's some, you know, that it's most of the people that fight and win, you know, they try to get rid of those people, and they have succeeded a few times. So, you know, maybe it's a good thing.
Yeah.
It could be used as a good thing.
I was blessed because I went in. When I was incarcerated, I was 148 pounds. When I came out, I was 76.
Wow.
So they were definitely trying to take me out, but I think my ancestors had another plan.
Right.
So I'm still here. And
so you still have work to do.
You do. You are truly an inspiration.
And I do it. Bomani can tell you I still do it. As best I can under the circumstances.
Okay. You have a beautiful spirit.
Thank you. That's very kind of you to say. I think
you have
so.
A beautiful spirit.
You should share
that with someone. You should share that with someone. I know you feel like you should be, you know, shut in, but you should share that spirit with someone. You never know how you can uplift and help someone else.
That's what I do. I call on my phone.
My phone is my medium now. Okay.
You are definitely.
I used to be very active physically, but now I move more on a mental and spiritual level. And being an elder, it works for me. It works for me. I'm not young, so I don't have that anxiety that a young person would have because they don't get to move around as much.
Right.
Me not being able to move around as much is not a struggle for me like it would be if I were a younger person. But as an elder, I'm able to be still for long periods of time, listen to my ancestors, share my experiences, what I've learned, and what it is the ancestors whisper in my ear to share with y'all. You know, this is like calling into George Jackson and listening to the broadcast. That's my assignment. Where other folks in my unit go and do other stuff, my assignment is to call in to the various broadcasts, and I'm a part of and co-founder of a broadcast as well. So I'm pretty good at where I am. You know, I've never mourned my disability or my vision loss. What I concluded is that I don't have sight anymore, but I do have insight. And there.
Yes, ma'am.
There you go. All day.
Yeah. So it's a good for me. And I had a great, great, great example because Dr. John Hewitt Clark was like a father to me. So I had a great example. I looked at how he handled going blind. And I couldn't have had a better example. Not a better one at all.
I think I'm gonna get your final thoughts because I think the brother and sister got to be going in a minute. I'm gonna give them final. I'm gonna let them get their final thoughts. I appreciate your diligence, you know what I'm saying, your scrub. Can y'all give it like y'all final thoughts, you know what I'm saying? Y'all want to leave us with any contact information or anything in regards to, you know, any websites or any way to get in touch with y'all or any way, you know what I'm saying, to get involved in y'all program, y'all institution and business and things of that nature, right? Please do so at your time.
Okay. As I stated before, I'm at Riverland Martial Arts Center, 4600 Quince Road, Memphis, Tennessee, 38117. We have classes Monday, Wednesday, Friday in the facility from 6 to 7 or 6 until. And then on Saturdays, we are here from 9 to noon. Feel free to reach out. Our website is RevWindMartialArtsCenter.com.
Okay. God Body Fitness and Nutrition, our hours are from Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. You can always call in and do a consultation. Give me a call, 901-729-6735. The website is godbodyshow@gmail.com. You can also check me out on Instagram, Chef_CHEF, the letter P as in Paul _. And also check us, the website is the website is godbodyshow@gmail.com. And you can also look us up on Facebook, God Body Fitness and Nutrition.
Okay. Again, I want to thank both of y'all coming to our broadcast and sharing all your understanding. I want to applaud y'all for y'all work and input y'all, what y'all committed in the past, whether the present, and the success in the future. Yeah, I want y'all to have success in the future. Peace and love. Free land.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Y'all well.
To independence now.
Yeah, they say those who do not move do not feel their change, but the African people aware of their pain, aware of the game, invader deception, black presidents who are white man extensions, people from Cape to Cairo rebel, cause fake independence and ongoing hell, colonial ties still keep them chained, the richest continents getting robbed again, the IMF and World Bank criminal schemes, what about reparations? To me it seems that every metropole from Amsterdam to Paris and Brussels was built with the hands of African labor, a slave relation, developing Europe at expense of the nation, but Africans rebel from the first conquest till flag independence at last accomplished.
Il y en a qui demandent la lutte contre l'impérialisme. L'impérialisme, regardez dans vos affaires, quand vous mangez les grains de riz, de maïs, de mil importés. C'est ça l'impérialisme, n'allez pas plus loin.
Yeah. Hey yo, the spirit of Lumumba lives on in Congo, like Thomas Sankara in Burkina Faso, Zamora Michelle, it was Viva Frelimo, but Mozambique still fighting for freedom. Why did these three who dare to invent the future then clash to the fullest extent with the colonizers? If we open eyes, if we can see the rich whites, we're scared of rising African power, real independence, of people's politics, anti-capitalism. So they stifle their growth in every way, so that South Africa looks colonized today. For any flaws of Mugabe, that ain't what they hate. Zimbabwe's not a colony, make no mistake. Look at AFRICOM, the African command. That's the US and a puppet shaking each other's hands. Divide and conquer is a hell of a tactic. They blame Africa for relations that backward. The whole basis was plunder from outside Rwanda, Uganda. The Sudan's divides, pushing forward war for precious coltan. So cell phones and PCs are sold in lands where people don't know how they were constructed. Your Windows now functions from a child's destruction.